Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that says, "Thank you, Daddy. May I have another?" It's time to do a little bit of stargazing. Nights. Joining me today is the Jamie Benn to my Tyler Sagan, or the Tyler Sagan to my Jamie Benn. It's Taylor Baird. Taylor, how are you?
I can't believe you just said that. I'm great.
I don't know. He scored a goal. It was an important goal. I don't understand the joke.
We definitely are kicking the after dark off right.
It's all right, man. It's okay. Well, it's just I'm elated. I'm in a good mood. I went through the entire spectrum of anxious fan emotions to wind up here, an almost broken man, and just the joy, you know, leapt out of me.
I don't know that elation is the word that comes to mind. I think there were definitely some big sighs of relief when regulation ended.
I mean, elation just in the sense of, Dallas didn't go down 3-1, and they didn't go into overtime, and they held on and won, and they scored at even strength. There were some good things.
So, fun facts I've learned throughout this series. Minnesota has never in their entire franchise history gone up 2-0 in a series. They've also never gone up 3-1 in a series. And guess what? That did not change.
It did not change. And it didn't change thanks to kind of a down the lineup effort from the Dallas Stars. They got some big not down the lineup from the goal, but in terms of tonight's goal scorers, it was a pretty these weren't the brand names that were kind of getting the job done.
It's just so interesting to see the discourse after this one ended, because it kind of feels like a lot of fans are thinking they're lucky Stars that Dallas kind of almost went out and stole one, so to speak. But then I think after game one, you could argue that Dallas deserved to win, especially after outshooting Minnesota 17-6 or whatever it was, ridiculousness in that first overtime. So, you know, it kind of feels like, yeah, they didn't have their best night, but maybe that's some karmic retribution.
Yeah, well, I think one, you know, these are the margins of a playoff series, right? Dallas, they probably on the merits deserve to be in a 2-2 series right now. But if you're imagining the old deserve a win-o-meter, then you're right. It's you flip game one and Dallas wins that one instead of losing. And then you flip game, you know, game four. But I would argue that, you know, yes, and I've even got all the nerd stuff up in front of me right now, right? And they got outchanced. They got outshot. They didn't carry the play, but this was a very tight game. I think it ended up being something like 12 high danger chances to 13 in favor of Minnesota, and expected goals were like 3.1 to 3.5, right? So this was one that was kind of bleeding on the margins, right? And it wasn't, I think that you could definitely say that Dallas rode their luck a little bit. I mean, you know, we talked about the Ottinger save already. They needed a miracle save. They needed a very good save in the waning seconds of the game to preserve the tie. But this wasn't robbery. They didn't have masks on. They deserved the goals that they scored. Even Minnesota got a goal line save to end all goal line saves right before one of theirs, right? So it's not like Dallas got kind of roundly outplayed and stumbled their way into a result tonight, I would say.
Yeah, but it wasn't exactly the statement game I guess many fans probably expected Dallas to have after Game 3's performance.
Yeah, you would have wanted one, but I wonder, and here's my first question of the night for you, Taylor, is barring another parade of Minnesota penalties, right, is this a series that's really going to have statement games?
Probably not. I mean, this was by far the closest, I think, series by all of the advanced stats metrics and all the analysts kind of saying this one's definitely going 6 or 7. And of course, here we are. It's definitely going at least 6. I don't think I would expect to see any like runaway wins again. I think they've kind of got them out of the system. I think the more important thing for me is that Dallas came in and kind of stole back home ice advantage. Yep. From Minnesota after they came in and took game one against Dallas.
Well, and they did it after, you know, kind of follow the, and this is, I always hate trying to get into players' heads, but, you know, following the emotional weight, right? So they came out flat in game one, played fantastic towards the end and lost. Then game two, like you're thinking, okay, well, this is much more like overtime, and this is much more like, you know, so game two almost felt like, you know, nature is healing. Okay, they figured this out. Here we go. It's going to be a 5-game series. And then game three was just a catastrophe, right? So from a statement perspective, I obviously would have liked to see them score a touchdown and run Minnesota out of their own building. But to steady the ship that quickly, to puncture Gustafson, to keep the power play hot when they desperately needed it to be hot, and then to keep their nerve at the end of the game when what, you know, looked like it was going to be a laugher in the last, you know, 3.5-4 minutes, all of a sudden turns into this intense pressure cooker environment. You know, there are statements that are, you know, one statement is we're going to, you know, come in and you can't do anything. The other statement is you're not going to rattle us. We're going to find a way to win. See you back in Dallas, right?
Yeah. And I mean, they managed to do that, but I think there are still some lingering questions. I think for myself, I'm just wondering like what Dallas is going to show up.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, what team is going to come out, and are we going to ever actually see them apply their game to the game? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like we've watched Dallas have to overcome Minnesota imposing their will and their style onto them. And I have yet to really see an example of Dallas imposing their will. And I say that because I don't think that game two realistically was them coming out and imposing their will. I think that a lot of that had to do with Marc-Andre Fleury as much as it did Dallas capitalizing on the chances that they actually got.
I think that's right. It was, you know, and it's hard to, when everything is working that well, you don't necessarily go to the good material, right? So it's game two. Maybe they were playing well. I think you're right. They could have, it wasn't the sort of utter casual dominance. Minnesota did come back to make it a little bit of a game, and you could argue, and I'm in the camp that it was much more about the quality of the chances Dallas was creating than anything Fleury was necessarily giving them. But, you know, your point, I think, is very valid, and that this has largely been a series of Minnesota kind of instituting the style of play and Dallas having to find ways to counterpunch around that and to score around that versus, you know, shifting it in any way, shape, or form.
And this entire series is always just going to have this big what if kind of hanging over it, because you have to imagine that the narrative or the looks are very different had Joe Pavelski not gotten injured in game one.
Yeah, but they played like dog S when they, you know, up until pretty much the moment he went out, they were terrible. And that's not saying I'm not trying to blame him or anything, but yeah, it's what version of, you know, it's not like we saw the ideal version of this team firing on all cylinders and then he gets hurt and it all falls apart.
No, but I do think that you would have seen, I don't know, I just think maybe like, I think you would have seen Dallas come out with maybe better starts in games 3 and 4 than they had. I don't know. Like there's an element that Pavelski brings that is a very intangible, and in the playoffs, the intangibles become the thing that really truly can separate a team in a series. And it just feels like they're missing something right now. Like, Jason Robertson has looked almost, I mean, like, is he hurt?
Yeah. I mean, the thing though, you know, Jason Robertson, after this afternoon's game, one goal, two assists, 3 points, you know, he hasn't been his usual self for sure. If I'm trying to sell you on a brighter tomorrow, he does have 14 shots and is currently shooting about 7.1%, right? So you can look at him and think, well, it will probably get better. But I think your point you made earlier about the playoffs being a little bit of a different beast, that kind of logic works when you have an 82 game stretch to look at, right? Oh, 7.1%, it'll probably level out. He's going to have a blistering month here, and we're going to think this is silly. The sad truth about the playoffs is you may not get enough time for the regression monster to come back, right? So if you have a bad week, you might just have a bad week. Whereas in the regular season, you can kind of afford to go hot and cold. So yeah, it's a huge problem right now. It's really limiting this team, and it's a major, especially they've effectively been, you know, with him struggling and Pavelski completely out of the lineup, it's really put a damper on where you typically see, to your point about controlling pace and play, right? The Stars usually build things out from their first line. And right now that line doesn't seem to exist.
Well, and for me, I just think, like, what Pavelski brings for Robertson and Hintz when he's in the lineup is partly the respect that he earns from the opposition. The opposing team knows that you have to keep an eye on where Pavelski is at on the ice. Otherwise, he'll get you. Whereas, I don't know that Tyler Seguin today has that same level of respect. And so, the teams, when they have to worry about where is Hintz, where's Pavelski, where's Robertson, it allows Robertson to just get open more. And that's what I think I've noticed the most about his game specifically, is he hasn't been able to find that creative space to be able to make the subtle plays that he does, where he can just absolutely snipe you. Whereas I think it's been easier for the Minnesota to key in on Robertson and take him out of the play now that they don't have to worry too much about what Seguin is doing in that similar kind of role.
I think you're right. And I think compounding that, we haven't seen the same level of offensive production thus far. Jamie Benn has the same, you know, one goal, two assists postseason as Jason Robertson. Mason Marchment hasn't done anything offensively. Max Domi hasn't registered a point. Wyatt Johnson has the single assist. Delandria, no points. You know, it's one of those situations where I agree with everything you're saying about the mentality that Pavelski brings and how he forces teams to adjust to the Stars and how that creates the pockets of space. You know, his ability as a passer, his ability is, you know, to see the ice, take the space, right? It creates for everybody. And then Dallas is compounding that right now by, you know, during the regular season, when the first line wasn't firing, you know, it was Jamie Benn's unit. They were creating that pressure in other places, right? You couldn't over-focus on Robertson because you had to worry about everything else. Well, you know, removing Seguin from his third line seems to have really, you know, they're not doing anything. And, you know, Benn is struggling. The second line is not really doing anything. So we're right back to watching a one-line team out there, and it's really hurting them right now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it just feels like the top line was the one place where Dallas couldn't afford to take an injury early in the playoffs, because what that's done is it's just rejumbled every line. Like, Marchment and Domi's line looking ineffective isn't exactly breaking news, considering when Marchment was out, Domi and Seguin looked almost invisible, you know? So, like, those three were the three, and they were supposed to be the ones that, you know, got a chance to re-click, you know, kind of the way they had been when they were first put together after the trade deadline before Marchment ended up getting hurt and missing a month. So it's like the one thing that Dallas didn't need. And I mean, I can think of other things that could be worse, and we're not speaking those into existence. But, you know, it's definitely exposed, I think, some of the depth that they were able to cover up throughout like an 82 game season, like you were saying.
Yeah, but it has
relative health all season long, so that definitely helps.
It has, and I do want to skew this. We're not going to be completely negative because for Pete's sake, they won the game tonight and they tied the series, and those are good things. It's exposed the depth in a good way as well. We had, you know, jokes at the beginning of the podcast. Dadonoff got his third, and as much as we're talking about Sagan being invisible with Mason and you know Domi down the stretch, he has slotted. He scored twice, right? One on the power play as well, right? So he has slotted in and found ways to generate offense. So from a depth perspective, they're, thank goodness, getting that scoring right now. It won them a game tonight.
So hilarious story about Tyler Sagan scoring, actually. My best friend came into town with her baby, and we all met up for dinner, and we're watching the Stars game. And because the baby needs to go to bed, we ended up having to leave between the second and third intermission. So we were driving back and listening to the broadcast in the car, listening to Josh and Razor on the radio. And we were talking right before Sagan scored, and I said, yeah, you know, it's been pretty rough with Joe Pavelski out, but Tyler Sagan's kind of done him proud with a couple of those tip-in goals right in front, and then bam, he immediately scores. He goes, it's like you spoke it into existence.
They were the sorts of goals that Pavelski would typically score, right? They moved Sagan into that spot on the power play, and he's found a way. They were 2 for 3 tonight, and it's going right now. And it's you know, depth is letting them down in certain areas, but I guess the beauty of depth is it's making up for it in others. And they certainly need more from the group as a whole. I don't know that you want to play this exact game 3 more times to close out the series. I don't know if you love your chances, but you know, they've been there, and we're going to get into a little bit more of the specifics, Taylor. We're going to take a very quick break, say hi to the Green team, and we'll be right back.
A message from the attorneys at Greening Law PC, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. If you have been hurt in a car accident, experienced malpractice from a physician, hospital, or were injured on the premises of a business, then call the lawyers at Greening Law. They have represented clients from car accidents to birth injuries to sexual assault cases involving clergy or hospitals. The staff at Greening Law, better known as the Green Team, fights your legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal. You know, we talk a lot on this podcast about our fierce Dallas Stars. The Green Team is your fierce legal competitor against insurance companies. So what are you waiting for? Consultations are free. They only get paid if you get compensated. So give them a call at 972-934-8900. Again, that number is 972-934-8900. Call now. Principal office is located in Dallas, Texas.
All right. So talking about depth, we're going to pirouette very, very violently onto the other end of the spectrum. And you know, yes, we've talked about Robertson struggling a little bit, Jamie Benn struggling a little bit. There are 3 people that Dallas came into the postseason knowing they would need to rely on heavily that are doing the opposite of struggling. So Roope Hintz right now co-leads the entire NHL postseason with 8 points. Jake Ottinger was fantastic again tonight. And Miro Heiskanen is currently tied for 2nd with 5 points, 1 point behind Adam Fox in terms of defenseman scoring. So while part of the story for the Stars is inconsistency, good and bad, throughout the forwards that they expected to contribute, another big piece of the story for the Dallas Stars is, you know, Hintz had points on all 3 Stars goals tonight. But the other story for the Stars is a couple of the big guns have really showed up. And, you know, especially in the case of Miro Heiskanen, I'm just done being surprised by it. He's just always amazing, I think.
He's just so good. It's easy to take for granted how often we watch him play, how good he is at the game. Like it's absolutely wild to me, no pun intended, that he doesn't get more recognition. I really appreciated that Elliot Friedman, you know, I think it was on his podcast, talked about how he had Miro Heiskanen on his Norris ballot, and he had him fairly high on his Norris ballot. And he's like, kind of making me look like a genius for it. But it's just what we see him do every night. It's kind of crazy that he just quietly goes about his business and is just rocking up points right now.
And not just that, he played 27 minutes in game four. The next highest defenseman was Lindell, who played 23, almost 23 and a half, basically 23-36. So Heiskanen is the guy for that unit. And what occurs to me, and this is more of an offseason topic to explore, but in a lot of cases, the Norris is one of those trophies. It's like the Selke in the same way that you kind of have to win it before you win it, meaning you have to have the season that's probably worthy about it to get yourself into the conversation for future considerations. And for me, this season really felt like the precursor season. You know, before this season, it was, well, he's elite defensively, but he's never going to score enough. Well, okay, he doubled his postseason total, and he's up. He now is putting up points commensurate with the big boys, right? And so this feels like the season before he turns into the guy that's just stapled to the top of the Norris ballot, or, you know, on or about there moving forward. If he has this exact same season next year, I think he's probably several places higher, just because that's the way that voting for the Norris seems to work.
And honestly, barring some Erik Karlsson 100-point season again, probably wins it.
I mean, you have it is very, very difficult right now to argue that there is a defenseman in the league that is significantly better than Miro Heiskanen. And it's certainly hard to argue that there is a defenseman in the NHL that is significantly more valuable to his team than Miro Heiskanen.
Are you saying that he should be put in the heart?
I just think, I mean, I'd put him in the Selke. I'd put him, we'll get, name an award, and I'll vote for Miro Heiskanen at this point. I'll give him a Grammy. I don't care. I imagine that you could hand him like a tuba and give him 20 minutes and he's playing a song on the tuba. Like he just effortlessly does everything. And to your point, it's become so normal that he is so effortlessly brilliant. And I just assume that he can do anything. I don't worry anymore.
I think the only thing I worry about watching Miro Heiskanen is what his defensive partner of the day is doing. that's the only question mark that I have.
Sometimes I really, really worry about this team playing him with a anchor around his ankle rather than somebody that can just let him roll.
He needs the Issa Lindell to John Klingberg.
He does. Also, another weird thing. And you may already know this, but how many minutes on the penalty kill did Miro Heiskanen play tonight?
Zero. I don't know.
Yeah, that's actually exactly right. He and Thomas Harley were the only two Stars defensemen to not play on the penalty kill tonight.
It's so fascinating too, because I mean, you could probably play him in all situations, and it's a good time for Dallas. But I guess that makes sense in a game where it was like 0-0 for the longest time ever. You're probably saving him to try to generate that offense.
Yeah, and the other thing is it seems like Dvorsa, the breakdown of that is there were four defensemen that played. So Hakanpää, Suter, Lindell, and Joel Hanley, of all people, saw time on the PK. But Suter and Hanley were both beneath a minute. So Suter played 54 seconds. Hanley played 37 seconds. So the Dallas Stars penalty kill tonight was basically 5.5 minutes of Hakanpää and Lindell. And it seems like that is DeBoer's group. Those are his guys, and they got all of the time with a man down this evening.
Did the dudes like never leave the ice for two straight minutes? Holy cow.
I mean, they were off for at least, you know, 54 seconds and 37 seconds, so they got a little bit of a break.
Doesn't seem like a lot.
It doesn't. No, it really doesn't. You know, other interesting things, Hanley with almost 11 minutes, Thomas Harley played 13:22. He did get on the power play. It was 14 seconds. So it maybe was just him trying to get off the ice and let somebody else have a turn. So he hasn't exactly, you know, it's not what he was playing in that wonderful stretch to end the season, but you know, it's not nothing. I think long-term for the Stars to succeed, you probably need to see him playing a little bit more, but, playoff times, you ride the guys that are getting the job done. And for the Stars defense, the real trend seems to be Heiskanen all of the time and Hakanpää and Lindell on the penalty kill, and figure out the rest.
Poor Colin Miller.
Yeah, how do you feel about that? Would you have put him in the lineup over Joel Hanley?
Yes, but for some reason, Joel Hanley seems to be a security blanket.
I always feel like a jerk talking about Joel Hanley, because Everything I say about him is brutal and negative, and it's not personal. I'm sure he's a delightful person, but he is just the hockey equivalent of, you know, punting on a fourth and two. Like you play him because you want to just like occupy 10 minutes with something, you know?
I mean, I don't think he brings negative value to the team, but I don't always see the positive contribution either. So, I mean, I guess in the grand scheme in a playoff series that's this tight, maybe just being a neutral player is a good thing. Like, you know, you're not actively harming the team by being out there. So maybe it helps, but it
reminds me of the darkest days of, you know, Hitchcock 2.0 and Bonus, where the focus, Joel Hanley is that embodiment of the focus is on not letting anything bad happen, not can we make something good happen. And I think you're right, and I can see the appeal with a coach, especially in a tight series. You know, when every single play's importance is so intensely magnified, having a guy that's not going to make any mistakes at the bottom end of your defensive group is maybe better than a guy that might make a couple of mistakes. But it still rankles me. I'm not gonna lie. I see him in the lineup, and I always sigh and think, oh well, that's fine, I guess.
It's a choice, but it does make you kind of wonder, like, is it truly the best lineup? Is it truly the best set of six that gives you the best chance to win that night? I don't know. Maybe just having the fresh legs is what was needed. I mean,
yeah,
that looked awfully sluggish last game. So maybe just by trading a guy like that out, you know, maybe it lit a spark, or maybe Colin Miller has, you know, some kind of lingering something that we're unaware of because it's the playoffs and everybody is just a game time decision.
No, everybody is 100% healthy, Taylor. And I resent your implication that that's not the case.
As Dean Evason said, it's the playoffs. Everybody is available at this time of the year.
I mean, that's the truth of hockey, right? And it is interesting to see. Like, I think, you know, the other piece is it's not like this was, you know, Gustafson having a fantastic game and then Fleury getting the start next time, right? It's not like the group had distinguished itself and, oh my gosh, how do you justify taking anybody else to insert Joel Hanley?
Yeah, but exactly.
It's something, you know, it's there's some stuff to figure out here. Would you say overall, right? So big picture, what is your vibe heading into the kind of back nine of this series?
What is the vibe? The vibe is, it feels very lunch pail. And here's what I mean by that. Just go to work. That's all they need to do. Just go to work. You have home ice back. Do the next three in front of your home crowd. You should get a lot of energy boost from a very, very loud building, especially in a tied series. You know, but you just need to go in and play your game and do the work. And the result should follow. Get out of the series and away from these guys.
I think that's a good way to put it. I still have there at some point you feel like they're going to need to be able to sustain pressure 5-on-5. And they've done it in spurts, but at some point the narrative has to pivot away from everything that Minnesota is managing to take away. And they're going to have to start getting some clean zone entries, and they're going to have to start generating some, you know, shots, some clear shots on net. Like they're going to have to start doing some stuff. That's kind of where they need to fix the way that this Minnesota team seems to be able to gum things up in the neutral zone and seems to be able to negate, you know, make sure that Dallas possession doesn't turn into shots as consistently as we're used to it doing.
And to me, I think that is why it was so important that they were able to go up and split the series and kind of reestablish the home ice advantage. We were talking about this, my friends and I, at dinner, and, you know, the question came up of, is home ice really that big of a deal in the playoffs? And I said, from like a crowd perspective, I don't know. I mean, maybe a little bit. Sometimes it is easier to be the road team. But the one thing advantage you do have is if you do have a good coach, that they can take advantage of the matchups, having last change at home as the home team. So, you know, the games that Dallas has looked better in have been the home ones where they have been able to kind of get the matches that they're looking for. So you kind of hope that maybe that is what they need to like you said, kind of figure out getting through the neutral zone a little bit better.
Yeah, and talking about if something's going to get, you know, if you want to get Jason Robertson untracked and if you want to get Jamie Benn untracked, being able to manage those matchups is a good way to do that, and something that's going to be important.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to have to. The good news is, right, Dallas has made their way into a 2-2 series against a very good goaltender and a very tough Minnesota team without having a signature game from their leading scorer / MVP candidate. And that is a bad thing in the sense of we'd all be breathing a lot easier if Jason Robertson was scoring 4 points a night. You know, that would be fantastic and nobody would turn it down. But I think it's also good news in the sense of they've won 2 games, could have won a third, despite having some of their normal things not show up, not work. And I'd much rather be in a position where the team is finding ways to win while there are still kind of obvious and clear next levels they can get to, than to see a team that's completely maxed out and still in a slugfest.
For sure.
You know, they still have to, I love the idea about going to work, right? I think that's the perfect mentality. That's surely what, you know, Coach Pete is imploring the group right now, right? Because everything I just said doesn't mean anything if they don't go out and play the games well and win the games. But this is a team that, you know, they're locked up in a tight one, as they say, but it's a team that they still have some, there's some avenue. You can see some very clear avenues for success and ways that Dallas gets out of this series right now.
For sure. If nothing else, the next 3 games should get interesting. You know, the subplots, they are amazing. Refereeing, calls versus no calls, Marcus Foligno in general.
Oh, Marcus. And they didn't win the game after, which is a disappointment. But I still think Pete DeBoer's sixth snipe on Minnesota being what, sixth in the league in penalties taken, is that's a Pantheon playoff coach chirp right there. It's like, oh, the team this is complaining. It's hard to complain that we're diving when you're one of the most penalized teams in the league.
So great.
You just love to see it, and love Marcus Foligno complaining about a high stick when you watch the replay and he did not get hit up high with a stick, as far as I can tell, at least.
Yeah.
So we'll end here, right? Give me, I'm going to go old school West question. So think about the next game coming up, tie 2-2 tie. Somebody's going to get a series lead. What is something that you could see? What do you need to see from the Stars? What are you going to see that relaxes you? Thinking of the first period when they get back to Dallas.
A 5-on-5 goal?
Yeah. Simple. Sometimes the simple answers are simple for a reason. Yeah, I'd say 5-on-5. Or at this point, I'd just settle for, you know, one of those shifts where they sustain possession, get 2 or 3 shots, kind of have the ability to move the puck a couple of times, get a shot, reset, do it again, right? But yeah, 5-on-5 goal.
Or a little cycle or something. I mean... That's one thing we haven't seen Dallas do a ton of yet, is actually get some cycle time in the offensive zone. So if they could figure out a way to do that and wear down Minnesota a little bit more, I think that could really play into the situation too. But I mean, hell, I'll take anything off of a butt, a skate,
Sagan's whatever. First tonight was a beauty in that regards. And I think as well, to your point, Dallas is, and it's not manifesting on the score sheet right now, but Dallas is a deeper team in terms of offensive talent. And so the benefit of some of those cycle shifts that we're talking about is if you can force, you know, every time you can force Kaprizov or Zuccarello, right, every time you can force Minnesota's top line to spend time chasing the puck in their defensive zone is going to have an outsized impact on the rest of the game, because, you know, Kaprizov played 25 minutes in that game. Zuccarello played 23. The next kind of batch of forwards, you know, Boldy played 19, right? Then you're getting into Hartman at 17, Gaudreau at 7. So there's a gap between the tip of their spear and the rest of the lineup, right? In a way that you don't see with the Stars. So, you know, no, Dallas doesn't want to burn a Jason Robertson shift chasing the puck, but in theory, at least, if they burn that shift, they can then, throw the bin unit out there, or throw Domi's crew or what have you. Whereas if you know, every time Minnesota wastes a possession with Kaprizov, that impacts their ability to win the game in a more profound way than it would for the Stars.
For sure.
So, you know, to your point about five-on-five possession, if Dallas can start to, that's one of those things, right? If they can establish their game, their flow, and put Minnesota in positions where they're having to defend for more sustained stretches, it should have a kind of compounding interest-like effect, because Minnesota will have, you know, fewer guys they can turn to after those long shifts to maybe tilt the balance back the other direction. But what do I know?
We don't know anything.
All I know is I'm going to be tuned in to the next game and hoping that Dallas can break this alternating win cycle and make home ice matter. I'd say, you know, to your point, 5-on-5 is definitely, you know, that or an early power play. I'd relax a little bit if they could get one of those like first minute, you know, first 5 minute power plays as well, and have that might help them out a little bit as well. Get them into the flow a little bit more.
For sure.
Well, thank you for joining, especially on a game night. I know you've got a bunch on your plate teaching children the way of the Stars, which is just noble work, and thank you for that. KT, thank you for jumping and recording, doing all the work. Please do not forget, not you and KT, although I don't forget either, but don't forget out there in hockey land to download, like the podcast, do all of the things that make us feel the attention that we so desperately crave. And here's hoping for continued good fortune in the next game. This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.